Hello, everyone, and welcome to ADDClasses.com. Tonight we have a free teleseminar, ADD ADHD Work in You, with Laura Rowlands. And in just a moment, I'm going to hand this over to Laura. But before I do that, I just want to let everyone know that Laura has done 6 other classes with us before, some great classes that can be found in our ADD audio library. And the ADD audio library has over 150 courses. And Laura's classes, I just actually took a look because I was wondering how many she had in there, and there's 6 in addition to this one that's going to be added. Got Time, Productivity Through Time Management, Practical Strategies for Setting Priorities, Procrastination and ADHD Strategies for the Real World, Self-Coaching for ADD and ADHD, Gain Focus, Manage Time, and Pay Attention, Taming the To-Do List with Effective Prioritizing, and Time Management Answers for Adults with ADHD. So you can find out more about the ADD Audio Library by going to www.addaudiolibrary.com. And with that, I would like to welcome back Laura Rowlands to addclasses.com tonight. So, Laura, I'm going to hand it over to you right now. Welcome back.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Tara, and appreciate the introduction. It's hard to believe it's already been 6 classes, and those bring back some good memories. Thanks to everyone for joining us tonight. As Tara said, I've taught a number of the free teleseminars here at ADD Classes. In addition to that, I'm an ADHD coach and an HR manager, and I also teach the Time Management Intensive here at addclasses.com. And if you're interested in that Time Management Intensive, I'll let you know a little bit more about it at the end of tonight's class. But our next session is starting February 11th, and that'll start at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you go to addtimemanagement.com, you'll see all sorts of information about it. And we've added a feature this year to the Enhanced Track. It's limited to 10 people, but it'll include a half hour of one-on-one coaching by phone with me, either during the course of the program or immediately after the program. So a little extra bonus there for you. And registration for that is going to open up on Thursday, January 22nd. So just a little bit about that. And with that, I just want to really jump into the learning objectives and the content for tonight. I'm going to be presenting the material until about 9:45, and then we'll have time for questions and answers. Tara will come back on, and if you've had any questions that you've submitted, we'll get to as many of those as possible. And if you haven't done so already on the website, I would encourage you to download the handout that I created for you. I'll be following along with that. It's got lots of room for you to take notes and can be a really useful and helpful tool for you. One thing I always encourage people to do is to pick one or two strategies from tonight's class that you want to start using right away. And I build my classes in a way that you'll get really, you know, real life strategies that you can use and try. And so look for a couple to just, you know, start using right away. And that way you'll really solidify your learning from tonight. So I want to draw your attention just to the learning objectives in your handout. And there's really 5 main areas that I plan to cover tonight and to help you learn and improve. One is just to learn how to handle tough conversations with your boss or anyone else at work. And there's a lot of things that can make those conversations tough. So we'll talk about some different strategies. You'll identify ways to manage the overall chaos that can happen at work. You'll find useful resources. You will identify simple strategies to boost your productivity. You'll strategize ways to enjoy your work. And the ways to enjoy your work, that's going to be a little bit of homework that I'm going to suggest that you do to really help you grow there. Now, some of the challenges that often come with ADHD in work, organization, following directions. Often that working memory gets in the way at work. Finishing assignments, arriving to either meetings on time or arriving to work on time, controlling your emotions, maybe even having anger issues come up at work, just time management in general, paying attention and listening, procrastination, that can go with those finishing assignments, impulsivity, and just handling the details that, often come with your work. So using those challenges sort of as a backdrop here, I want to jump into the tough conversations at work. And these can come around, come from challenges around following directions, finishing assignments, impulsivity, controlling those emotions, paying attention, listening. The question I get asked most about ADHD and work is around, do I disclose or do I not that I have ADHD? Now, there's a number of things that you want to think about if you're thinking about disclosing to your employer that you have ADHD. One is, are you performing well? Are things going just fine at work, but maybe it's a little chaotic and you're here tonight to learn some strategies? If that's the case, if things are going pretty well, there's no need to disclose at work. Are you in need of accommodation? And we're going to talk a little bit about some ways that you can identify accommodation ideas. But if you need an accommodation, then you're going to consider disclosing to your employer that you have ADHD, because if you are going to ask for an accommodation or an adjustment to your job to make it more suited to your ADHD, then the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, they would require that disclosure of your ADHD in order to request an accommodation, because your employer isn't going to be expected to make an accommodation for a disability that they don't know about. And then you wanna look at, are you concerned about reactions and treatment if you disclose? And the other thing to think about, just kind of to wrap this topic up, is that if you can make some changes to your job or the way you approach your job, or if there's ways that you can ask for certain things to be different in a job without formally disclosing and formally asking for an accommodation, then you may not need to disclose. Now, on the flip side, you may have a situation where your job's really, it's you're in dire straits and the job is not going well, and you're thinking that you might be at risk of losing your job, then you may want to consider disclosing your ADHD and asking for specific accommodations. So this is something that you might want to talk about with a counselor, a coach, a trusted resource. If you've got a human resources department at work, you might talk to human resources before you actually talk to your boss. So those are all different things to consider if you're deciding whether or not you're gonna disclose at work. Now, the next point that I have here for tough conversations is to be proactive. And being proactive means so many different things, and there's a few things that I want to make sure I cover here for you. The first thing on being proactive is, think back to that to disclose or not disclose conversation. If you are thinking, okay, if I could have a quiet workspace, I could be able to focus so much better and really be productive. So consider being proactive to figure out, is there a way that I could move to a different cubicle or a different office? Could I wear headphones at work? Could I wear earplugs at work? You know, are there things that I can do to make my environment more quiet in order to be able to focus more and get my work done? So being proactive with sort of adjusting that workspace might really help you in the long run and help those tough conversations. Maybe they don't have to happen, or maybe they're just a little bit better because your performance has improved somewhat if you're having, you know, issues with your performance. Other areas about being proactive is ask for help with planning a project and setting deadlines. Especially if meeting deadlines is a challenge for you, when you get a new project or you get a new assignment for your boss, from your boss, then ask for, now I want to break, you know, you might say, okay, boss might say, Laura, I have this project and it's due 4 weeks from today. Okay, great. You know, I want to think through some milestone deadlines so I can make sure that I meet this final deadline. Can you help me set some of these deadlines? Or could I bring you a sample schedule to get your feedback on it? And be proactive like that so that your boss knows you're already thinking, you're already being proactive, and that you're really concerned about that end result. The other piece is, I always encourage people, if they're worried about a conversation with their boss, and this is any type of conversation with any boss, then if you can be proactive about it and address it with them before they address it with you, then that gives you a chance to practice what you want to say, make some notes around your key points that you want to make, and then you can go in and manage that conversation. It's not that it's going to be an easy conversation, but it's going to be easier than it will be if you wait for your boss to come to you with an issue. The last point here on the tough conversations at work is around managing impulsivity. And the feedback that I get from a lot of people when they talk about ADHD at work is, oh, I blurted out at someone. I was really short with someone, and I really didn't mean to be. Or it might be, I said yes too often. You know, hey, Laura, can you do this assignment? Sure, no problem. Wait, I had 20 other things on the to-do list, and now this just rose to the top. So that's what I mean around managing that impulsivity during those conversations. So a few strategies that I have found to be really helpful when people are working around managing that impulsivity at work. Whenever someone asks you something, and especially if you're having an emotional reaction to it, count to three before responding. You know, people say count to 10. I think counting to 10 is maybe a little unrealistic, unless maybe you're really angry and you might need to. But counting to three is sort of a little bit shorter, a little bit more manageable, and it still gives you a chance to think before you respond. And you know, that's something that you can start practicing that tomorrow, even if it's not sort of that emotional situation, but just practice that and get used to purposeful response is what I'm trying to get to there. Other things to do around managing your impulsivity is to practice relaxation and meditation techniques. And these are not easy. They're easy to do just in the moment, but they're not easy to make a habit. So it's a matter of maybe every morning you take 5 minutes to sit quietly and do some deep breathing. maybe you do 5 or 10 minutes of yoga every morning. And if you've ever practiced yoga, they work with you a lot on breathing techniques. And there's, you know, many of you might have been to a class by Terry Matlin, and she's a colleague of Tara and mine. And she wrote an article about yoga one time, and it was really hard for her to do yoga. But I think in the end, she got to a place where she found that it was really beneficial. And so I think that relaxation, that deep breathing, can help you manage that impulsivity at work. And then the last thing to do is to practice those tough conversations with a friend, or even just in the mirror, or even in the car on the way to work. But, you know, think about a situation that could come up that maybe you would typically, like, blurt out at someone. And play that out in your head. Okay, my boss just came in and said this to me. How am I going to respond? And it might feel silly, but that role-playing can be really powerful in helping you improve your reaction when that situation occurs. All right. So that is what I wanted to cover for those tough conversations. Let me move on, and if you go to the next page in your handout, chaos. And chances are, if you're here at tonight's class, you have some sort of chaos at work. So I want to share my top favorite strategies for helping you to manage that chaos. And that chaos can come from, you know, lack of organization, time management challenges with getting those assignments finished, so you're in chaos trying to get it finished, procrastination, and handling details. First thing, when you're feeling chaos and you're feeling like, I just have so much work going on, I can't even focus, and I can't stop because I've got to get this all done. And you just, and I get that way too, and I feel it too, and you just sort of feel yourself, just you're getting more and more wound up. And the last thing you are thinking that you want to do is to take a break. But I want you to think about taking a break. It doesn't have to be a long break, but it gives your brain a rest to rejuvenate and come back and manage that chaos a little bit better. It also gives you just a different perspective when you come back to the work. So what do you do when you take your break? Move. You know, go for a walk around the office. If you can, do some jumping jacks. I talked about yoga before. Do a couple of yoga poses that can be really rejuvenating and reinvigorating. Go get a glass of water. I try not to get like a coffee every time I get up for a break. I do like coffee, so sometimes I'll do that, but then I've started just getting hot water. You know, sometimes it's a little chilly in my office, so I just go get a cup, you know, heat up some water, go get a cup of hot water and just use that. You can do tea, you know, something to help you manage, you know, any dehydration that's going on and really just help you focus and then get back to work. Now, things not to do during the break. Don't check Facebook. Don't check your personal email. Don't start texting your friends, because those are really going to keep you in that state of chaos. Those aren't really going to be that break that you're looking for, and that's going to help you break the cycle of the chaos. Next strategy here is to stop multitasking. And it's really easy to want to multitask and to really just, okay, I can do this, and then I can do this, and I can do this while I'm talking to this person, and I'm going to be on the phone, and I'm doing this project. And, I mean, I feel it in my voice. It gets chaotic just even thinking about it. So, and there's a book that's been written called The Myth of Multitasking, and I do recommend search that up, and you can go to the author's website, and he's got some good videos there as well. But trust me, you'll make more mistakes when you multitask. You will, you'll be able to really focus less on the task at hand, and things are going to take you longer, in addition to building more and more chaos. One thing that you can do to really help yourself to stop multitasking is to pick your top three things that you're going to do each day, and you can get other things done after those three, but just pick a focus of three to really help give your brain permission to stop some of that multitasking. And then you can even, you know, maybe you only want to spend an hour on each of those three things. So use a timer when it's time to move on to the next task. And that can really help. The other idea to help you stop multitasking is to clear the clutter from your desk and even from your computer screen. You know, close down the computer programs you're not currently using so that you're not bouncing back and forth. Next under chaos is to manage interruptions. And there's a study that's been done that shows that we're interrupted on average every 3 minutes in our work. And some of that is when we interrupt ourselves. And then, so think about that, how often we're interrupted. And then there's an author by the name of Julie Morgenstern that talks about how it takes 20 to 25 minutes to refocus after an interruption. Well, you couple both of those together, and these are referring to, you know, a non-ADHD population or the general population. So some are going to have ADHD and some are not. Well, you couple that with having ADHD, it's a wonder we get anything done, right? It's like, wow, I really get a lot done for all those interruptions and how much time it takes me to refocus. So I really, and we'll spend time in the time management class talking a lot about interruptions, but some of my favorite strategies for managing those interruptions are close your email and only check your email at certain times, shut off your phone. I had a big project in my HR work a few weeks ago, and I guess it actually just ended last week. And I would go through significant periods of the day where I would just completely shut off my phone. And that meant if someone, you know, if someone needed to get a hold of me, they could call my desk phone. But that was really the only way that they could reach me. And I was so much more productive, and it was a little less chaotic. It was still a pretty stressful project, but it really did help. The last strategy to manage those interruptions is I love to use a sign. And perfect example, in my HR work, I'm responsible for doing payroll twice a month. And what I mean by a sign is I'll put a sign outside my office door that says processing payroll. And I shut my door, and everybody knows, all right, Laura's busy. We can't interrupt her. And this is something that makes people nervous because they think, well, but Laura, my boss says, you know, I need to be interrupted. But if you have something that you truly shouldn't be interrupted for because you really need to focus on, I think your boss will work with you to help you identify, you know, ways to manage those interruptions and you know, to even use a sign like that says, you know, maybe you're in sales and you've got your prime selling time. Or, you know, we probably on the call tonight, we can probably come up with 500 different examples. Next strategy to manage the chaos is to read email carefully. And too often what happens is you'll go through your emails really quickly, and you won't read all the way to the end, or you just don't read it closely enough, and you miss the assignment that you got at the bottom of the email or buried in the middle of the email. So because we do so much of our communication by email, really encourage you, you've got to stop to read that email. Now, I talked about, for the interruptions, one strategy of closing your email. So what you can do is kind of combine these strategies. And let's say you're going to look at email maybe once every other hour. So maybe at all the even hours. So you're going to, you know, spend the first 10, 15 minutes going through and responding to email. So then you're going to have more time to focus, and you're also not going to be interrupted by email 50 times an hour as all those other emails are coming in. So kind of that strategy can really be two different strategies for you to help you manage that chaos. And then the last strategy I have here under managing chaos is just to reduce distractions. So I already talked about turning off the phone and you know, the interruption piece of distractions. Other things that you can do, go to a conference room. If you're distracted at your desk or in your office, then go to a conference room and shut the door. You can leave a note on your desk or even, you know, put it on your calendar where you are. Tell your boss where you're going if you need to. But go and shut the door and just do that focused work in that conference room. You could go to the library. Maybe your company has a library, you know, in the office area. I used to work somewhere that had, you know, a couple of libraries. And so I could go there to really get that focused work done. Or maybe you go to the public library. If you are self-employed, a business owner, you know, maybe you can't really, maybe you don't have a big, huge office where you've got a conference room, but can you go to the public library? Sometimes it can work to go to a coffee shop, even though for some that's going to be more distracting, but for others, sort of the quiet noise in the background is actually helpful and gets them out of their office where those distractions are coming in. Another thing that you can do to reduce distractions, if you can get to work early, and I know sometimes getting to work on time is a challenge, but if you could get to work early, even 45 minutes to an hour early, you can focus before other people arrive at work. You know, even though I'm an HR, I'm a coach, I love working with people, but sometimes I just need quiet time to get work done before everyone gets to work. So those are some of my most productive times when I can get to work early and there's no distractions. And then people don't even really bother you when they get to work because they're like, oh, there must be a big project going on. So you know, Laura should not be interrupted right now. So I'm gonna, you know, let her get her work done. The last strategy I want to cover around reducing distractions is to write, so you have ideas that come up, and they're ideas that you don't want to lose. They're either things that you remembered that you need to do, they're big projects or big ideas that you have that you don't want to lose. Have somewhere in your planner or a notebook where you're going to write those ideas down. And, you know, some people might call it a parking lot. Some people might call it a someday list. You know, all right, someday I'm going to develop a whole new curriculum on a new topic. Have somewhere that when those thoughts come in your mind, you can write those down so you're not worried about remembering them, but you won't be worried that they're going to eat up your time now. So it's a nice balance of keeping track without letting it eat up a whole bunch of your time right now. All right. Next, I want to move on to resources. And you've got a number of resources listed here on the handout. And I am, in the interest of time, I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because I would really encourage you to check out all these different links that I've provided for you. But I do want to talk about a couple. One is the first bullet, the Job Accommodation Network. And this is, the Job Accommodation Network has a plethora of ideas around accommodations that people might ask for at work. And it's not just about ADHD. I mean, it's every disability that you can think of. What are some accommodations that have helped other people and that you might consider for yourself? So when you're stuck on, you've got a challenge with work, you think it might be related to your ADHD, but you're not really sure what you want to ask for, I would really recommend going to this askjan.org website and checking out the suggested accommodations for ADHD. And some, they might be a situation where in order to get that accommodation, you'd have to ask for, you know, you'd have to disclose that you had ADHD and you'd have to ask for an accommodation. There's going to be others that you might be able to work with your boss to identify, well, how can we make this happen? And that maybe it's not really an official accommodation, but it's more, you know, I gave the moving your office idea earlier. You know, maybe it's more of a, you know, I work a lot better when I have less traffic going by my cubicle. I was wondering if I could move to that cubicle down the row. You know, those types of conversations, they don't have to know why that you are asking for that accommodation. So I highly recommend that you check out that website. And then I've got, of course, addclasses.com. Tara talked about the library, and there's always the free teleseminars. Hopefully you're taking advantage of those and really gaining your knowledge. CHAD, Children and Adults with ADHD, I've got the two websites there. Attitude Magazine is a really good one, has great resources. If you're looking for an electronic to-do list, I listed two websites to try there. Also, just a different idea is to use post-it notes on the wall and take a picture to capture your list. So kind of going away from the website a little bit. The other one that I want to spend some time with you on is the learning styles. And this is the vark-learn.com link that I have here. And what this does, it's free. And you go in and you answer a series of questions. And the report that you get will tell you the learning style or styles that are most predominant for you and gives you ideas of ways to use that for learning. So it's a little more geared towards school than work. But if you think about learning styles, you can use knowledge about learning styles to apply to your work and to decide how to get things done in a way that's going to work better for you. So you can really look at that and customize it for yourself and, okay, what does it tell me about how I learn, and then how can I work to apply that in my work day? And so I really encourage you to take that inventory and review those results. The last resource that I have here is something, it's on page 3, and it's called the Cornell Note-Taking Method. And I just put a little sample table in here as an example. You can Google, you know, the Cornell Note-Taking Method, and there's different templates out there. I think this method, it was designed at Cornell University for school, but I think it can really work in meetings to really help us take information from a meeting and then go implement it outside of the meeting. So what you have on the left-hand side is where you're going to put main topics, keywords, and questions. So there's not going to be a lot written on the left-hand side, just kind of major points. And then on the right-hand side where it says notes, you're just going to take your notes as you're going. And then at the bottom, that area is for a summary of that page. So it might be, you know, the biggest assignment that comes out for you from that page, or it might, you know, it might just be a two bullet summary of that whole page. It often helps to go back at the end of the meeting and fill out that bottom portion. So encourage you to take a look at that in your meetings, and that could have probably fit under so many of our sections here tonight, but I decided to put it under resources. All right. So it's amazing to me how time is flying, but we've still got plenty of time to cover the content, so don't worry. Increasing productivity is the next topic. And I've got some of my favorite strategies here around helping you increase productivity. And what I want to do is I want to reorder things a little bit. So if you look at your handout, go to the third bullet. And I'm going to talk about that first. And that is use a task list and look at it. And it's really self-explanatory. I don't have a lot else to say about that, except if you use a task list and look at it, you will get more done. You will lose less, you know, you will lose fewer assignments. And you will be surprised at how much you're getting done. I find that sometimes when people avoid doing like a to-do list, that they don't give themselves credit for all the stuff they did. I've done this with some of my clients, and they're like really quite pleased at the end that, oh, I didn't realize I got so much done. So it's got a number of benefits to it, although I know most of you are probably sitting here going, Laura, that is the last thing I want to do, and I didn't want you to give me that strategy. And I get it, but I really encourage you to try it. So if we look at that one first, then I want to go back up to the top of the list, the delete tasks. Because when you make a to-do list, make a task list, something that can really help you get a handle on your productivity is to look at that list and say, okay, what can I delete from this list? I had a position years ago that I'll never forget. There was a task that I had on my to-do list for probably, I bet it was on there for a year. And finally, I got thinking about this strategy of deleting tasks, and it was like, okay, this is really hanging over my head. My boss asked about this a year ago, and there's been a lot of other priorities, and no one's asked about it since. No one's going to notice if I delete it from my to-do list. And so this is really going to be your number one way to decrease the size of your to-do list. And how it increases productivity is then it lets you focus on the higher priority items. The next way to increase productivity is to get enough sleep. There's a lot of things you can do. There's apps out there. There's an app that I do like. It's called Sleep Cycle App. My only caution is if you have an app that requires your phone to be in the room, you've got to check in with yourself and make sure that the phone isn't so much of a distraction that it's taking away from the data that you're getting on that Sleep Cycle app. So I have personally found I like the app. I don't like having my phone in my room, so I'm not using it for the most part. But there's, you know, the Fitbit, the Jawbone, a lot of those have sleep trackers too. So that's one thing to help you get enough sleep. There's some other good strategies around getting enough sleep. Avoid caffeine 4 hours before bedtime. Avoid electronics 2 hours before bedtime. I've heard people say to avoid naps, although I've heard other people say that they help. So that's one of those things that you might want to experiment with and see what works for you. And then going to bed at a usual time and using a bedtime routine can also really help you get enough sleep. There's been studies done that we think less clearly and we are less productive when we don't get enough sleep. So you wanna really look at ways like these that I've suggested to really help you get a handle on your sleep. If you're bored and losing focus when you sit, then stand while you're doing your work. Now, some places you can actually, you know, make a standing option. I know someone who actually like sets up binders and puts a little, puts their computer, their laptop on top of those binders so that they can stand up while they're at work. You know, I've got a window ledge that sometimes I can put my laptop on to stretch my legs and to move around a little bit. And that can be really, really helpful. If you're in a position where you can't sit still, you know, take time, take a walk. Make time for morning or lunchtime exercise. If you're in a meeting and you feel like you can't stand still, as long as you do it in a non-disruptive way, it's perfectly fine in 95% of the situations to just quietly stand in the back of the room or against the wall. That can help with those sleep issues too if you haven't had a good night's sleep. If you find yourself having poor productivity because you're just staring at a piece of paper, so maybe you have to write a report or you're writing a long email or something like that, there are different tools, graphic organizers that you can use to really start to organize your thoughts. I put a couple of website links here. You can also use a whiteboard. I find I think better if I can write bigger. I don't know why, but it does really help me. So if you don't have one at your desk, you can, you know, maybe go to a conference room or something. Sometimes it helps to use a voice recorder or record into your phone. Kind of talking it out in that way. I put an idea, a sample of a graphic organizer here at the bottom of page 3, where, you know, if you're write down the main idea of your report or that you're writing, and then start to write the supporting ideas around it. You know, kind of get out of the computer, out of that linear thinking approach that isn't sometimes going to work for you, and that can really help you sort of get moving and stop staring at that piece of paper and actually get moving forward on your project. So the last thing that I promised I wanted to cover tonight is enjoying your work. And what I would really like you to do, I wish I could just give you, you know, 5 quick strategies to help you enjoy your work. And unfortunately, that's an area where I haven't figured out how to give those kind of simple, real quick and easy to implement strategies. But there are some things that you can think about doing to help you enjoy your work. Identify your strengths. You know, what do you bring to the workplace? And maybe they're utilized in your current job and maybe they're not. If you're not sure about what your strengths are, ask your friends, ask your coworkers, ask your family members. You know, just really, really think about what am I good at? And what positive things do I bring to the workplace? And then think about what positive qualities does ADHD or ADD bring to my work? So maybe it's that it brings creativity. Maybe I bring a really good energy vibe to work. You know, we've talked all, you know, for the most of the class tonight about challenges, but you bring positive stuff to work. And don't lose sight of that and really figure a way to remember it and highlight it, and it'll help you get through those challenges, and it might even help you have a little more fun at work. And then also think about what do you enjoy about your current work, because if you can find some joy and some enjoyment, then it can really make it easier to implement those strategies. And then the last thing that I really want to stress is, you know, and I think probably Tara's been asked this and other ADHD coaches are probably asked this a lot, But what's a good job for someone with ADHD? And I'm a true believer that there's no one good job for someone with ADHD. But if you can find a job that you enjoy and that uses your strengths, that's going to be a good job for you. So it's not about finding a job that's good for ADHD. It's finding a job that's good for you as a person. And, you know, I'm thinking there may even be some classes in the ADD audio library on sort of that career search that you may really want to look at. So, and I would really encourage you to do that if you're feeling like, oh, my job just isn't enjoyable and I'm kind of feeling stuck right now. Might be something that you want to look at. So before I wrap it up and see if we have any questions that have come in from everybody, just want to remind you that we are starting the Adult ADD ADHD Time Management Intensive February 11th, and that is a Wednesday. It's 2 or 3 weeks from tomorrow, February 11th, and registration does start on Thursday. And again, I think it's at the bottom of your handout also, but the enhanced track is limited to 10 people, and that's also going to include a half hour of one-on-one coaching with me that you'll be able to schedule either during the program or a week or so after the program ends. So I'm excited about that additional bonus that we're including for the enhanced track. So with that, Tara, let me check in with you and see if we have any questions.
Yes, we've had some questions, and I have to say you've answered most of them during your class.
I always get
the one about what's the, you know, best job for a person with ADHD, so I'm glad you answered that. We had a couple, which I'm not sure if you covered, but as an HR person who works in HR and an ADHD expert, what do you recommend about disclosure for somebody who's interviewing for a new job, especially when they've had multiple jobs or jobs that they haven't been at that long?
You know, it's so hard to answer that question without really talking with someone and knowing mm-hmm. the specifics. In general, I would not recommend disclosure in that interview situation. You know, unless there was something that you found was really like very, very job related that you felt like you might not make it through that interview, but if there was some sort of change, minor change, you know, they could make to the job, that you might be able to do it. But I'm going to say 9 times out of 10, I would end up recommending probably not to disclose during an interview.
Yeah, that's what I've heard a lot of the other ADHD career experts recommend too, is more, unless it's like some special circumstance, do not mention it on the interview.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we have another one that's somewhat related to what you were talking about. What about when you're the boss and you have ADHD? How do you recommend going about disclosing it to the people who work for you or under you? Or is there anything differently than, you know, anything different about what you recommended just in general about disclosing ADHD at work?
No, that's a great question, and that definitely comes up a lot. And I would say, you know, if you're a boss and there's certain things that you need from your employees, and you know, something I might recommend to a manager is to get a written update of projects once a week from your team, so that you can really help keep on track. And depending on the situation, I think you might be able to say to someone, you know, I have ADHD and it really helps me to get this from you. So I think in many circumstances, that sort of just informal disclosure, I think that can actually work out really well. for someone. I think you still have to evaluate kind of that overall workplace situation. And if you mind, if your bosses know as well, because obviously if you tell your employees, eventually your bosses are going to know as well. You know, I worked for someone who was very open about, I can't focus, I have ADD. And probably the ADD probably helps that person be awesome at what they do and made that boss maybe a little more relatable, knowing that he had a challenge with that. At the end of the day, though, it really comes down to what you're comfortable with. And everyone on the call, I would really recommend you really be very comfortable with whichever way you decide, because once you've told, you can't take it back.
Mm-hmm. And we have one, which I know I hear this all the time, and this can be, you know, really people, how do people get to work on time? Besides getting up earlier, going to bed earlier, I mean, this person says no matter what they do, they still rush and they either get there like just on time or a couple minutes late. What do you recommend? I mean, I just know this, it's so important to get to work. The number of people over the years that I have heard that have got fired because they get to work like 5 minutes late and no one told them, they came in one day and they were fired. I mean, it's just, it's so important for people to get to work on time.
Yeah, it really is. There's a few things that I recommend, and definitely I think the sleep is a huge issue, because, you know, if we're dragging and we can barely get out of bed, then it's really hard to get moving in the morning. There's a few things that people can do, though. One is to set multiple timers. And do it every day. So, and I actually do this for my son just so, you know, we don't lose track of time. And, you know, 10 minutes before you need to leave the house, set your first timer and then set your second timer at the time when you need to be walking out the door. And maybe you need three timers. You know, it's setting timers as signals for when I need to leave. Because even if you set a timer that says just when I have to leave, well, that didn't give me any time to get ready. The other thing that can help a lot is just to make a morning routine for yourself, and have, you know, you do the same things in the same order every day. And that can sound really boring, and people sometimes roll their eyes when I suggest it. But I found that it can really work because then you kind of, over time, you can get more on autopilot to really get yourself moving in the morning. And then the last thing is more kind of, it goes with everything, but I would really recommend always build in, like, extra time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm in Michigan, and it snows in the winter. And, you know, you gotta leave at least 10 minutes earlier when there's any amount of snow on the ground. Now, sometimes there's huge snow and there's just nothing anyone can do to get to work on time. But, you know, even when there's just a little bit of snow or some heavy rain, that extra time can really help you out.
Yeah, I mean, definitely strive to get there early, not on time. I know a lot of people with ADHD don't like to get places on time because there's like an awkwardness of what to do with that extra time. But it's so important to get to work on time. I've worked with people that I've even, you know, they've had somebody call them in the morning, kind of like a wake-up call that you get if you stay at a hotel, like not necessarily a service. You could hire like someone like a personal assistant. You pay them to do that. I don't know if it's $10 a week. But, I mean, it's so important to get to work on time. And I'm sure, Laura, as an HR person, you've seen this really, you know, affect people, especially with ADHD, when they don't get to work on time.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that you want to be proactive about, too. Because if you're on this call and you've already seen it be an issue, I'm here to tell you, even if your manager or HR hasn't said anything yet, they've noticed.
Yes.
They've seen it.
And it'll come out of nowhere. And you'll, you know, when it's time to lay people off, the person who gets there 3 minutes late but stays 2 hours late to make up for it still gets fired. So do whatever you can to get there on time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. What can people do to remind themselves or to actually look at their task lists? They make them, but they kind of forget they're there or get distracted and don't look at them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I suggest making an appointment with yourself, and so you could set it as a recurring appointment on your calendar. Now, ideally, I want you to look at it every day. If you're thinking, Laura, you're crazy, and that's never going to happen, then maybe you start with, you know, every 3 days or something, you look at your task list. And you could even set the time for a little bit different each day. So maybe it's 8 o'clock on Monday, and it's 8:30 on Tuesday, and, you know, 8:15 on Wednesday. And why I suggest that is if you've got these automatic appointments and if they're always at the same time every day, they'll likely just you'll soon learn to ignore them. Mm. But if they're at a little bit different time, that can help get your attention. The other thing I would suggest is figuring out a way to keep that list in front of you. So, you know, I'm really bad if my planner's folded up and, like, in a drawer, I won't look at it. And I teach people, look at your to-do list. But if it's out on my desk, sometimes Franklin Planner used to sell those like, binder holders and, like, cookbook holders, sorry, you know, to where it would sit up on top of your desk. So kind of physical reminders like that. That would help for a physical planner. If you're keeping it electronically, I'm even thinking if you print it occasionally and have it, you know, out on your desk somewhere, that can really help, or maybe even on a bulletin board. I think
Yeah, just reminders help, just getting in the habit of it, like you were saying.
Exactly.
It takes practice, and depending on who you talk to, it might take 21 days, it may take 3, you know, everyone has a different, number of how long it actually takes.
It's more
with ADD,
than,
I think
than
it
days.
Doesn't matter, it changes, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. We are actually at the end of today's class. Are there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave people with, say, Laura? And is there maybe anything you didn't cover that you'd like to cover in the last couple minutes?
Gosh, you know, I think I did cover everything. I really just kind of as a parting thought, though, really do encourage you when we close tonight, just really look over your notes, look at the handout, and pick out one or two things that you're going to try out tomorrow and see if it makes a difference for you. And I think chances are it'll help you make an improvement in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just want to remind everyone about the ADD Time Management Intensive. Registration begins on the 22nd, this Thursday, and our scholarship applications are due on, I think it's the 5th of February. I might have that number off. But, you know, if you are filling out a scholarship application, please read the page carefully and make sure you do it. It says I get scholarships, like, during every program, and I can't give them to people because they don't follow the directions, and it's sad. I want to give one to everyone that, you know, submits one in, you know, it needs a scholarship. So definitely make sure you read the scholarship application page very carefully. Read it like at least 3 times before you submit the application. It's not that hard, but
a
lot of times don't read it, and I hate not being able to give them out because a lot of people can, you know, really use the scholarship.
Right, and it's so generous that you do that, and I do really encourage people to apply for it if they need to, and like you say, make sure it's complete so that your request can be considered.
Okay, well, I'd like to thank Laura for this excellent teleseminar, and thank you, everyone, for listening tonight, and this is Tara McGillicuddy, Director of ADDClasses.com. Thanks again, everyone. Have a great night.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.